story so far. Here's what I tried to teach you yesterday. I don't remember what I said. But here we go. Meat and milk is not just about food. I showed you from that version of the Tide, Deuteronomy to Varim, that after listing all the different categories, at the very end, after the summary, it then says, Lot of Ashadadibachalabimah, do not cook a kid its mother's milk. Implied that somehow it's bigger than everything that's gone previously to it. And I might mention, if you look at the Rashi there, it's a bit more interesting because it moves on to the next section. But anyway, that's the idea is that meat and milk is not just about eating, it's something bigger than that. Number two, chicken is not meat, it just looks like it. Okay? So rabbinically, we call it meat because it looks like it. Now, someone told me afterwards in the class, someone said, oh, but in some shops they will put, you know, chicken in packages next to salmon in packages. And I'm like, yeah, in packages, where it says chicken on it, then fine, you know, it's chicken and one's salmon, and you don't get confused between fish and chicken and meat. But in shops, when they put out meats without labelling each slab itself, they will put meat and chicken next to each other, and they'll put fish in a separate place. So normally, there is a danger they can get confused. So rabbinically, we say, do not allow to have it. That was what Rabbi Akiva said in the Gemara we saw yesterday. And I showed you the Rambam, who brought out a very interesting halachic issue. He said the following. But if you think chicken is meat, biblically, not rabbinically, but if you think it from the Torah that chicken is meat biblically, then you're breaking a biblical law, right, of Baal Tosif. You mustn't add to the Torah. So if you think chicken is biblical, you're breaking a biblical law, which is a bit wacky, but he's being very strong about it. And that is cardinal example of not adding to the Torah. The point I wanted to use from that yesterday is that, therefore, chicken is actually not part of the subject of meat and milk. It's a practical, technical issue, but it's not really part of the subject. In which case, what's it all about? To quote Alfie. So, let's go on. You've got the handout for today. This is a really fun class. I normally teach it as part of Sukkot, but it's just as much about meat and milk as it is about Sukkot. So let's do that together. When Daniel Schreiber first pointed out one little issue to me, this set me on this entire class, and so I thank Daniel for telling me that. He's a very smart man. And he said the following, he said, Raffi, let me show you something which is really wacky. Now, as I told you yesterday, the phrase, Lot of Ashel Gadi Bachalev Imrod, you will not cook a kid in his mother's milk, is mentioned three times in the Torah. The third time we looked at yesterday is in Devarim, in the context of food. Yes, at the end, big issue, but it's about food. The other two times it's mentioned in Shemot, it's not in the context of food. In fact, the mentioning of you mustn't eat tamei food is earlier on in the Torah. It's not even in the same place where it could have been in Shemot. I'm not getting into that now, but if you're interested in it, a few chapters before Lot of Ashel Gadi is first mentioned, it does talk about, actually the chapter before, it talks about food issues and it doesn't come there. It comes in a wholly separate place where it's not really about food, really. What is the context? Let's have a look, and it's really fascinating. So, let's look at Sukkot. The festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Pardon? Handouts, one to share. Is there one spare one for two to share here? You want to pass forward? Thank you, help each other. There we go, pass it forward. You can sit next to someone, that helps. Yeah, good. Okay, so the festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, are mentioned in the book of Shemot, and in Vayikra, and in Bamidbar, and in Devarim. Right? Four times they're mentioned. And each time is a different context, because each book has a different character. So you have to relearn it in the character of the book. But in Shemot, we actually mention Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot twice. Now, look at this. This is really brilliant. When you see this, you go, "Duh, I never saw this before. It's really neat." But thank Daniel. Here we go. In Shemot chapter 23, right, this is in the Sefer of Mishpatim, so it's the small print of Sinai, God's going through with Moshe all the commands, and he introduces the festivals, and it says the following, in verse, chapter 23, verse 14, Shalosh Regalim Tachog Lich B'Shana, three festivals, okay, Regalim, foot festival, because you have to, then when they got to Israel, they're going to have to walk and do something special for it, you shall celebrate for me every year. And I haven't given you all the text here, I've done it in brief, but it's all pretty well laid out here. Verse 15, Et Chag HaMatzot. So verse 15 describes the festival of Chag HaMatzot, which is Pesach. Then, V'chag HaKatzir, and the feast of the first harvest. Right? When Bikurei Ma'asecha, the first fruits of your works, what you sow in the field. What festival is that? Shavuot, the first harvest is Shavuot. And then, V'chag HaAsif, and the festival of ingathering, the end of the harvest. But Set HaShana, at the end of the year, when you gather in your crops in the field. What festival is that? Sukkot, the third one. So it's very neat. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. Now notice, what is Sukkot called here? It's called Chag HaAsif, the festival of Evin Gathering. Now we celebrate Sukkot on the 15th of Tishrei, which is just after the beginning of the year, Rosh Hashanah, on the 1st of Tishrei. But what does the Torah say? But set Hashanah, at the end, you'd see our exit at the end of the year. Well, wait a second, how can the end of the year be 15 days after the beginning of the year? Short year. Right, what does that mean? We'll come back to that. Did you notice that? But that's not the issue yet, that's a side issue. We'll come back. Now, so it's very neat. The Pasuk, verse 14, said there are three festivals, then one verse about Pesach, then Shavuot, and then Sukkot. And in fact, Shavuot and Sukkot in the same verse. So it's talking about the cycle of the three. Very nice. Please come forward. Who's got a handout? Someone's going to sit next to them with a handout. Anybody? So just sit over there on that side, come sit next to them, and you'll see a handout. Otherwise, you really won't appreciate this. Okay. Then in verse 17, come on down. Tara's right. I'll try and behind it. Okay.
You said away. Pardon? It's very, very loud.
I'm very loud.
Okay.
Right, verse 17, and then Shalosh, verse 17 is now summarizing. Shalosh Pa'amir Bashana Yeh Kosov Havah. I will see all of you then three times a year, and you're going to come to Jerusalem. This is in the future. Okay? So now it says it again, and now it summarizes again. So look at verse 18. So it said three times a year you'll come, and then it mentions at the end, straight after, Lo Tizbach Al Dam Chametz. Al Chametz, Dam Zivchi. Olin Chalev Chagi Al Bokeh. Right? You shall not offer, verse 18, blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, nor shall the fat of my sacrifice remain until morning. What's that talking about again? Pesachish, right? It talks about unleavened bread, and don't leave it till the morning. We know the Korban Pesach, the special Paschal offering, has to be eaten and not left over till the morning. So it's kind of summarizing again a few extra laws. A little bit more about Pesach. And then, look at the next bit. Verse 19. Reishit bikurei admatcha tavi beit Hashem elokecha. The beginning of your fruits you will bring to the temple. When did you do that? Shavuot. So it's brilliant. We've had three times a year, then we describe Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot, and then we said again, three times a year, and a little bit about Pesach, a little bit about Shavuot. What are you expecting now? Sukkot. What does it say? It's Sukkot, obviously. So I'm shouting it. It's obviously Sukkot. I mean, the Torah takes it as read. That's Sukkot. Right? Can you see it? It's so neat. And what's great about it is it doesn't happen once. It happens twice. To make it even clearer. Again, now in Shemot 34, we're now at Mount Sinai. We were Mount Sinai. We're now post-Ten Commandments. And again, at the end of a key section, and by the way, both times is at the end of a key section of laws. Hirsch points that out. Verse 18, again, it's a source B now. Et chag ha-matzot tishmor, keep God the festival of matzot, guarding the matzot. Et chag shavuot tzaseh lacha dekurek tzichitim. And the festival of shavuot will be the first fruits of your harvest and stuff. V'chag ha-asif, and the festival of asif, notice by the way, it doesn't call it Sukkot again. It calls it chag ha-asif, the festival of ingathering. Tukufat hashana. What's tukufat? Tukufat is the kind of the change of the periodic change. Right? When the change of the periodic cycle, at the turning of the cycle, at the turning of the wheel. Which is weird, because I thought Rosh Hashanah was the turning of the cycle. Maybe Sukkot is, 15 days after, we have to get to that.
But in the Torah,
I know it's not, absolutely right. But I'm talking about what we keep today. Okay? Absolutely. It's not called Rosh Hashanah, it's just the beginning, I agree. But we have to understand how we have to relate the Torah to today as well. We'll get there, trust me. I'm a doctor. We'll get there. Okay. So we had Kasa Shavuot Sukkot, and then verse 23, Shalosh Palim Bashana, three times a year. And verse 25 again, Lo Tishchat Adam Chamed Dam Zetiv Lo Eina Bokeh Zevach Chaka Pesach. Again, summarizing. A little bit more about Pesach. Verse 26, Veshit Bukeh Atmat Chat Tavi Pesach Shem Lekecha, the first fruits, speak to God. That's clearly Shavuot. And again, Lots of Ashad Bidi Bachelet Bimor, which is obviously Sukkot. Isn't that cool? What do you see that? You go, but why? And not why is that Sukkot? And also why a key issue of Jewish law, Kashrut, in this? These are two out of three. two out of three mentionings of Crush Fruit, the whole meat and milk thing, the whole stuff, comes in this context. So, Lot Mashagadi Bachalavimo, meat and milk, is about Sukkos. Anybody? You're probably right, because you work it out. But once you've seen the structure, right, you've got to find a way out of this. So I show rabbis, they say, oh, but it's talking about, because it's talking about eating and festivals, so it makes it about kosher. I'm like, come on, Rav. The structure's so neat. 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3. You know, 3 issues, 1, 2, 3, 3. It's too neat. And twice.
Was there a tradition at that time to make a sacrifice of that sort of this place?
Okay, so it's an issue. Is that the time of the year when you would cull, so that's the end of the harvest, right? You go into the winter months. If you can't feed all the animals you've eaten, then actually you can't give them food anymore because you need the food for yourself when the winter's going to come. So you've got limited in your subsistence of your society. So that's why they culled animals. They couldn't do them. So it could be about cutting, and if you're cutting and eating lots of meat, don't eat kiddish mother's milk, don't kill too much. Could be that, right? That's one possibility, but it's, you know, it's like, that's a nice point, but it should be something more fundamental to do with Sukkot and the turning of the year, or the end of the year. It's a few other ideas.
Maybe the Canaanites used to eat kid bull and its mother's milk at Sukkot time.
You're quoting the Rambam. We'll see that in the fourth day, the principle that others did it, by the way. There's a great article I've quoted from Jacob Milgram about, they probably didn't, by the way. They found this wonderful source that said it was Canaanite, and everybody quoted academic papers for years. And Jacob Milgram said, it's rubbish, look it up, translation's rubbish, it doesn't work. So I know, I printed it out, it's really weak. Could be, but suddenly Canaanites? Vus Canaanites, it's Torah. But, you know, the structure's too neat. It should be something that's so blindly obvious that you shouldn't have to go to external sources, either agricultural or historical idolatry. I want something that fits from the text. And that's why I keep stressing this issue that Sukkot is called Chakka Asif, the festival of ingathering. At the end of the year. So Sukkot, it's called the festival of ingathering at the end of the year. Okay, let's keep going because there's a lot to cover. Okay? Right. So, since we're talking about Sukkot, you now know the three times the meat and milk is mentioned. Two in Shemot, we just looked at, and one in Zohar we saw yesterday. But now we've made the connection with Sukkot, then we have to understand Sukkot fully, and then maybe we can go back to the meat and milk thing. Okay? So let's leave meat and milk spinning over here. Right, you know, the big plate spinning over here, you can see it. Marcus told me to do this. The plate spinning, it's here, and I'll come back to that. We're going to do the Sukkot spinning thing, we'll come back to that. It's all fine. Okay, see, Vayikra. This is the third mentioning of Sukkot in the Torah. Daber b'nei Yisrael chamishah sayom l'chodesh ha-shvi'i, on the 15th day of the 7th month. Chag ha-Sukkot. It's called Chag ha-Sukkot. Finally, it's called Sukkot. Okay? When you gather in the crop of the land. Why have I bolded that word? Because even though it does call it Sukkot here, it still has the word gathering in. So you've had three mentions of the Sukkot in the Torah. Only one of them uses the word Sukkot, but all three of them use the word gathering in. So which is more fundamental? In other words, yes, you know it as Sukkot, but the Torah sees it more as gathering in. Just like you said earlier, we know it's Rosh Hashanah, but that's why it never calls it that. So the point I'm trying to make is, from the Torah point of view, the gathering in is the key. Let's see if that keeps going. Fourth version in Bamidbar, where it's talking about the extra sacrifices. There, it doesn't mention gathering in. It just talks about on the 15th of the month, it would be called holy, you mustn't do the work. It should be called a chag. Another name for Sukkot is chag. It's just the great chag. Chag Hashem Shabbat Yamin. But it also doesn't call it Sukkot. Okay? So at the moment, out of four mentions, three out of four gathering in. I'm not used to this. I'm not a singer, as you can see from this. No, it's about doing it. If I did like this, do it like this or without.
No, with.
Well, I'll do it down here. Thank you. Jewish educator, no electronic ability. No, you press this button here. And then you do something there. See, I did a PhD in theoretical physics, so I can't do anything, but I can theorize about it. Pardon? Down here. So lower. Right. So, out of four mentions in the Torah, Sukkot, three out of four mention gathering in. Oh, this worked. Yeah. Three out of four mention gathering in. And,
that was the wrong one.
I need to talk, don't I? Okay, three out of four mention gathering in, and only one out of four mention Sukkot. Trust it. Should we leave it? A big hand. Right, and the last mention is Devarim, chapter 16. Chag HaSukkot, I say, difference of opinion is healthy. Chag HaSukkot, but I'm right, I'm teaching. Chag HaSukkot, I say, Nafash Shabbat Shambim. The festival of Sukkot you will do 7 days. Bas Bacha, Mikan Cha, Mikan Bacha, you gather from your grain and your wine. So then, mentions both. But still, you notice now, out of five, twice it mentions Sukkot, four times gathering in. So it's about gathering in. Okay? So, since Basa Bachalav, Lotfishna, Benibachagunwa, do not see the kid as Mother's Milk, it's mentioned twice as Sukkot, I think they're fundamentally connected, but I'm not going to call it Sukkot anymore. I'm going to follow the Torah. I'm going to call it the Festival of Gathering In. So, what's gathering in at the end of the year, or the turn of the year, got to do with do not boil a kid as Mother's Milk? So, do not boil a kid in its mother's milk at the end of the year, or the cycle of the year. So there's a similarity there, right? You've got a circle, the joining point of a circle, and then you've got the mother and the child, and the linking of those two. Maybe something to do with that. Following? Well, we'll colour in a bit more. Okay, look at the bottom here. So Sukkot is Chag HaAsif, the festival of ingathering. It's harvest time at the end of the year, right? The year's end, by they finish the whole harvest, right? That's one of the reasons we do a sukkah, by the way. You know, the harvest, you know what they did? People would nick stuff during the harvest. Because it took ages, they didn't have combine harvesters. They had to do it by hand, it took months. And so people would nick stuff. So what did they do? They would allow, the Gemara talks about this, people would, they'd have guards, not scarecrows, it's about people, at night, who would sleep out in the field, in a little hut, called a sukkah. Ah, right. And they'd sit out to make sure people didn't nick stuff at the end of the year. Okay? And when all that's done, when all the sukkah is finished, and the planting is done, the land is left alone. The winter is coming, as you know. Outside is turning white, perfect for it, sterile and dead, and there's no more life above ground. It's the end of the year, really, at that time. That's what's happening in Israel. Now, turn over. Now, in gathering, if you want to understand what use of a word, you're not sure what it means, asif, to gather in, see how it's used in the Torah, in other places. And there's another fundamental structure of the word asif, to gather in. Okay? What does it mean? When is asif also used? It's used in death. Anybody important who dies gets gathered in. I'm sorry, I ran out of time, I didn't get to translate these, but I'll leave them to you to translate as we go. When Avraham dies, Vayigvar Vayimat, when he withered and died, Avraham, Besevatavar, in a good old age, Zaken, so very satisfied, Veye asif el amav, and he was gathered to his people. Yitzchak. Yitzhak, when Yitzhak died, Vaye Asef El Amav, he was gathered to his people. Yaakov, when he died, right? Asef Agai, he passed away, put his feet on his bed, Vayikvar, Yasef El Amav, he was gathered to his people. Now, anthropologically, or archaeologically, they'll tell you what this means is they buried a person, and then after they die, they dig up their bones and put them in a. Ossuri, I was going to say herb, but ossuri is better, and put them in a cave. And that's what Cave Machpelah, they think, is in. It's got possibly a big tins of bones. So they gathered their people, right? But it's interesting, who's mentioned, right, of these people? Then when Aaron dies, okay? Who dies first? When Aaron dies, he should be gathered to his people. And actually, when he died, he was as well. So when Aaron died, he was gathered to his people. Why these ones, by the way? Why other than Yitzhak, Yaakov, Aaron, and Moshe? Why particularly those? And they're important people. But why particularly those? And when Moshe dies as well, they are Sef Alamecha. he was gathered to his people. So, ingathering means death, which means Chag HaAsif. Sukkot is the festival of death. What? I thought Sukkot's festival of life. First half of Tishrei is all spiritual, looking forward, then we get on life. You know, we're shaking Pavlovich, it's all about life. We say in Hannah, Lo Hametim Hallelujah, Yaluka, the dead will not praise you. It's all about fresh, you can't have a withered olive, right? You know, first day fully fresh, on the 8th, 7th day, it's all getting a bit withered, you're looking around at, you know, how's your olive doing? But, you know, everybody tries different things, like you fall, put it in the freezer, and freeze it outside. My father's got a whole big thing on it, what to do. Anyway, but the point is, Sukkot's about death. Well, I'm just taking what the Torah said, don't blame me, it's what the Torah does. The Torah seems to associate gathering in with death. So the festival of death, which kind of fits, because everything's going to the ground now, all the plants are going to die now, going to bury them in, maybe it is a time of death. Let's keep going. Life and death on Sukkot. Okay? Which Megillah do we read on Sukkot? Everybody always goes, the other one. It's like, obviously you read Rutz at Shavuot because it's harvest time. And obviously you read Shir HaShirim, a love story at Pesach because you're going out of Egypt. And obviously you read Esther on Purim. Okay? Which one of these down? And obviously Eicha is that structure of the temple, so we read that Tisha B'Av. So there's the other one, Kohelet. So we'll read that on Sukkot. Now Kohelet, and Sukkot, that joyous, life, happy festival, Kohelet is like, oh, it's not going to work. It might be good, no, it's not good. I had a good idea, it's not a good idea. Like, everything's bad at Kohelet, it's all bad news, right? What does it say, Kohelet? By the way, what does Kohelet mean? Ecclesiastes. What is that? They always do, they translate to another word you don't know what it means either. What is right, Kehillah is a gathering. Kehillah is a gathering, a congregation, a gathering as well. You know, most Kehillah and Anglo Jewry are quite dead. So here we go, life and death. Let me quote to you. L'chol zman v'et l'chol chavetz tachad ha-shemesh. There's a time for everything under the sun. Et la nedet, time to be born, v'et lamut, and a time to die. It's a direct quote out of Blade Runner. Time to die. Right? Even better, by the way, because that's not depressing enough. Chapter 7. Tov Shemi Shemin Tov. A good name is better than good ointment. But Yom HaMavet, Yom HaHivaldo. Better the day of death than the day of life. You say that, we read the Megillah of Kohelet on Shabbat Cholam on Sukkot. So you're singing Sukkot, right, in Shul. No one ever reads it because it's depressing and quick and it's early in Shul. But if you actually, the rabbis want you to read it on Sukkot, say, better the day of death than the day of life. That's what you say. Well, obviously, because it's like our sin, festival of death. It's quite surprising, isn't it? But it's all verses. It's all verses. Okay? Right? And better the house of feast, and better to go to a shiva than a simcha. Which do you prefer? A good shiva? Or a good simcha? No, seriously. But, and they say things about this because, you know, a simcha might not turn out well. Right? It's a wedding, it might not turn out. A brit, it might turn out bad. But a funeral, you know what you're going to get. Seriously, they literally mean that. Right? Look at Rashi. Rashi talks about that. We don't have time, we won't look at it. Midan haget b'chagim, amlechet v'shter, shimida shino haget, ele b'chayim. But there's ones about life and death. It's also, you know what you're going to get in a funeral. Right? It's fixed, but with life, potential, it's all very exciting, but there's worries about it. In death, you at least you know where you are. You know the thing. And when you summarise the life of a person, you have to be very clear what they are, what they aren't. And that's the way things are. You've got to be clear. So, how does that make any sense? Right? Sukkot, I've shown you from quite a few sources, seems to be much more about death than about life. Aksameach, of course. I love a great shiver. You can be happy you can be happy about something even if it's sad, you can be happy about, well, you're absolutely right. Is it about death, but it's about being happy about the situation. And maybe you can be more happy in a shiva than you can in a simcha, but simcha could turn out bad. In a shiva, you know what you're getting. You could be happy, celebrate a perfect life. In other words, what is the joy here? You're absolutely right, it's a simcha. But simcha doesn't just mean life. Simcha is about real simcha to be about reality. Give me back the ante. And that's what I want to get to here. So what's it about? How can this be? Only if we mean, maybe, that accomplishment is better than potential. Once you finish something, in other words, when Moshe's life, when, you know, Moshe died, but a good old, we say to everybody, you should die like Moshe. I'd may have swim till 120. Have a whole life. They lived a good, they lived a life old age. Don't be sad, be happy. They want us to be happy. Moshe died. He's gathered to his people. Let's celebrate Moshe. And Avon, and Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and Aaron. Okay? Didn't know mention of Yosef. Interesting. Well, Yosef could have been here. He was kind of big as well. But remember, his bones didn't get gathered. Remember, because he got taken up. So he's exceptional, which is why he's missing. Oh, that's for later. But anyway. So, potential is always open to failure, but death is fixed. Game over, no surprises, perspective gained. It's very interesting, actually. Shlomo Karlebach, once he died, that's when his soul really took over. And the reason why, and you'll know this if you read List magazine, is he was a great man, but he wasn't perfect. And he did some iffy things. And people got nervous about him. Okay? I don't want to say any more because he was a good man. But, and there were questions about him. Once he died, it was over. And his music and his greatness could shine. Because it could be shorn of the man. And this happens sometimes with people, by the way. Okay? It's very interesting. No, I'll give another example. It's not poker, but if you just humble, I'll give another example. sorry, but it's just, it's too early. Anyway. Fun? Right. Now, there's a related theme. I'm showing this as a big theme in Sukkot, and this is going to help us understand what's going on. Yes?
Rafi, I'm having a bit of a problem with your premise here.
Good.
We're getting carried away with, I think, the connection between Aspacha and Haggah Asif and everything. And from there, quoting a couple of lines, and there is a recurring motif in Kohelet, I agree.
The whole chapter 12 of Kohelet is better death.
There is a recurring motif about mortality in Kohelet and the meaning of life. But I think you're taking things to a rather extreme.
Absolutely right. I'm getting to the word that you said, which is it's not really about death, it's about
mortality. It's about human vulnerability.
Exactly. I'm getting to that. You're absolutely right. Since you introduced it, it's
not about. Take exception to calling Sukkot the festival of death.
I've got to get to Halloween, man, so, you know. But I think that we're going to get to mortality, but death and mortality are quite related.
And also, don't
okay. What did Woody Allen say? I want to be immortalised by not dying. Okay? So, it's about mortality, but they're related issues. So, I'm building up. But let me do one more bit, please, just for the benefit, and then we'll go back. Because the last one really puts the knife in. Turn over. Shabbat Cholamoed Sukkot. Shabbat Cholamoed Sukkot. Right? Rabbis love it. It's a Shabbat, and it's a Cholamoed, so we're going to choose a Haftorah to really summarise it. And the two Haftorahs, the one of, remember, because you don't do the normal laying. On the Shabbat, you lay for the Torah, you know, the set of the week. But when you're in a festival, you cancel that. You don't do it until after. So in Shabbat Cholamoed, you're a special laying. One on Pesach Cholamoed, and one on Sukkot Cholamoed. You know, they've both got middle days. So you do a special laying.
And this you do.
Fine. And this?
You read from Shabbat. You gave your first page.
Yeah, I know. I'll take the Haftarah. There's a special one. You don't do the normal overnaming. And the Haftarah is a special Haftarah as well. And what it is, it's from Ezekiel. You know this word, Gog and Magog. You heard of that? Gog and Magog at the end of time, the big battle? Yeah. Everybody dies. Everybody dies. Let's read it. And it shall be on that day that I will give Gog to Gog a place for burial in Israel, the valley of the travellers to the east of the sea, and it shall block the path of the travellers, and there shall be buried Gog, all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Hamon Gog. Here's the thing. You all know about the battle. You might have heard of it, that we saw at the end of days this great battle of Gog and Magog in Megiddo, Armageddon, that's where it's from. Okay? Right? At the end of days, this big battle. But no one ever reads the second half of the Haftarah, because Jews aren't involved in the battle. We watch. We sell tickets and eat popcorn. But what do Jews do in the story? And this is amazing. Look at this. For 7 months, oh, interesting, 7 months, the cart in the year, shall be the house of Israel will bury them, and they will cleanse the land. And all the people of the land shall bury them, and it shall be to them a renown on the day that I'll be glorified, says God.
And they shall set apart men a continual employment passing through the land to bury with the travellers those who remain upon the face of the earth, so to clean it after a certain month. And the travellers who pass through the land, when any sees human bone, then he shall set a sign upon it, so that the grave diggers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. And also the end city will be Hamona. Thus shall we clean the land. What happens after a war? You have to bury the hatchet. You have to finish things off. You have to bury the dead. After a great war, and everyone's fought each other, then the hard bit happens. You have to fix things and bury the dead and look after the life that's been lost and memorialise it. And that's our job. After death, Jews go and bury anybody. That's our role in the battle of the end of time. I love that idea. People go and kill each other, and then we go and pick up the pieces. You've seen how to sell that, right? No, it's like, what do they call it? Zakah. You know, every bit, Chas v'Shalom, when there's a death, every bit of body should be buried to show respect that death has been gone. So burying a body is a sign of respect. You respect that this has been a terrible battle, that ideologies got destroyed and we fought each other. But at the end of time, that battle will happen. But you know what? Life carries on. And after that battle, at the end of it, we have to go and bury anybody. Can you imagine at the end of Lord of the Rings or Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe, if the good guys go and bury all the orcs? It's just something that mythology can't even imagine. That morality of after death, you'll bury all the dead, and the land will be cleaned again, and everyone will be able to be comfortable. Because as long as the bodies are left out, we can't have comfort. If you know our story of Betar, same issue. So bury the dead, bury the hatchet, and we can move on at the end of time. So, and we read that in Sukkot. That's pretty depressing as well. Unless it's not about death, but as you rightly said, it's about mortality. There's something important about mortality, that the end of life is part of life. We have to recognise that. And even though life ends, some lives end, other lives continue. And the cycle continues. Tekufat Tashana. There's an end of things, and then life carries on afterwards. When Frodo and Sam chuck the ring down in Mount Doom, that chapter's called The End of All Things. And the screen and the movie went black. It's all over. And they thought, Frodo and Sam thought it's over, and they lay down ready to die. And the screen just goes white, and then the birds come, and life carries on, and actually they made it back with the Shire, and it continues. Because it's the end of all things, and that's good, that's okay, because Frodo managed to get rid of the ring, he managed to not be in control of his desires. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's wonderful. And so it's over, I can die now, take me away. But he was given the privilege of continuing. And life carries on after the cycle is finished.
Continues.
Good.
And there's a quotation, music is life, and like it, inextinguishable.
Right, and the life carries on. Even though that one, death, life carries on. But what happens if life didn't carry on? What happened if you wiped out a whole generation? Then life couldn't carry on. What happened if you killed the child of the mother? Then it couldn't carry on, could it? So the cycle of life is in the mother and the child. What if you destroyed both on the same day at the same time? How about one in its mother's milk? What would you be saying then about the cycle of life? Interesting. There's a whole movie built on this. Oscar winning, one of the 10 biggest grossing movies of all time, about this very issue. That life is important, and fighting a battle is important. But if you wipe out an entire next generation of a family, then why would you do it? And it's worth a number of people dying just to save one member of a family so that life could carry on. The movie is Saving Private Ryan. It's exactly what it's about. It's based on the story. Very much changed. You know the story, right? The mother, Mrs. Ryan, had four children. Three have already died in battle. And so the last one mustn't die. Because if he dies, then she'll have no children to survive. And the whole point of this war is so that we can live. I know it seems weird, killing to live, but that's what war is. But if she has no children, there's no next generation of her line, of her family, then we haven't saved anything. And it's been about death as opposed to mortality. So we have to save Father Ryan. Even if others have to die in the process. And as the last man, Tom Hanks, is trying to save Ryan, is the last one who's now dying, and Ryan is so embarrassed that these 12 men have died to save his life. And by the way, it's amazing. You asked Tom Hanks, what did you do in normal life? He said, the greatest life for me. I'm a teacher. It's great. That's what he really is, I'm a teacher. I always look in movies for great moments when people say they're a teacher. Right? It's in the last rubbish Indiana Jones movie, but there's a great moment where he says, I'm a teacher. I can't remember, it's very funny, I'll come remember later. Anyway, so yes, at that moment when he's dying, Tom Hanks is saving Ryan, and Ryan says to him, what can I do, you've got so much for me, you saved my life for this, what can I do? And what does he say? He says two words. He says, earn it. And the film flicks to modern day, when an old Ryan is now visiting his dead friend. And he cries when he's got his wife and kids. And he says, well, have I done it worthwhile? Have I lived a meaningful life? And Spielberg is teaching us with his movie. And his father fought in the Second World War, trying to say to us, these men died for us. That's what the war's about. By living a meaningful life, we've earned the right to live. But if we don't live a meaningful life, we haven't earned the right to live. Earn it is the challenge of the survivors of the war. So the cycle of life and war and death is horrible, but it must continue. It must be earned if the cycle can continue. Now we're getting somewhere. So is Sukkot healthy or not? It's full of life because we live outside of the living world in our sukkah, but we take our best china and sit outside. So I'm going to argue, maybe it's about mortality, as you say. Sukkot is about recognizing the frailty of life. We understand that bit of it. You live in your sukkah, you realize it's not so great in the real, I might have a nice big house, but I'm in my sukkah now. Right? It's great, by the way, inviting non-Jewish people to your sukkah. Right? Because they walk through a lovely house. It's nice and warm. And past the dining room table, which is a lathe, and they get nervous. Say, come outside, and they sit there freezing. They say, this is my festival, and they say, right. So don't invite non-Jews. So I might get the festival of mortality. And this is great, by the way. Okay? So what do? We invite guests. Sukkah. But there's a tradition. Have you ever heard of Ushpizin? Yeah. As well as making a great movie, it's originally a tradition. What you do in Ushpizin, you invite dead people, to be clear here, you invite dead people into your sukkah to join you. Who do you invite? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aharon, and David. Seven people each night. Five out of those seven are Asafel Amar. I said earlier, the two that aren't are Yosef, because historically he got moved. And David is not part of the Torah, so he's later on. Right? And David is Mashiach, and the idea of David is that the seed of David never dies. So that's why he can't be Yosef. But five out of seven are. So it's interesting, the connections. The people that are gathered to their people, gather into your sukkah and celebrate with them. And tell them, you know what you started all those years ago? The cycle? We're still doing it. In 2010, in Cold Finchley. Look, it's my sukkah. And you're here. The cycle continued. You were mortal. You died. But you've been immortalized in my sukkah. And you can't die. And every day of Sukkot, we take a little etrog and we go in a circle around the shul, and that's called a hakafah. Hakafas. Hakafot? Why? Because it's the tukufat hashana. It's the cycle of the year. So at the end of the year in shul, you have to walk around and summarize the whole cycle. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. I finished my entire year. I own this place. Okay? I went to Haus, which is a public school. And the line and Haus is called Serve and Obey. It's their motto. But by the end of it, you pay so much bloody money to that school, we all call it serve and pay. And we walk around as if we own the place, because we pay enough. Right? So that's the idea. At the end of the year, Sukkot is such a relaxed festival in Shul. Just feel at home. Well, I've done the Yom Kippur now. I've done the Havet. Okay? I've done all that stuff, I've done my bowing and all that stuff, and I've ventured my heart out, and I've apologised to God, and I've said, I've done everything, and I'm still bloody here, and I own this place, okay, and I'm going to enjoy myself, okay, and that lulav is mine, and I love, getting relaxed in my lulav. I always try and joust other people with their lulav. It's kind of, people get, English Jews get very nervous. I mean, in the old days, no one had a lulav, right, there was one lulav for the entire community, Right? Now we all have them, and all these men are so embarrassed with their lullet, they're like, just enjoy it, you know, play, fight, you know. It's part of you, it's part of life. And we go in those circles at the end. And on Shana Rabba, the seventh day of Sukkot, we go around seven times. Seven lots of seven. And we invite seven shvizim. Right? And seven is always the cycle of completion. And the Simchat Torah, which is a modern, you know, secular, not secular, a modern diaspora festival, 14th century, we go around seven times with the Sefer Torah. Can you see all the power, all the cycles of everything's being completed? All the cycles are finishing now. Everything is over. Life has come full circle. 7 days of the week, seven in Shemitah, seven Hakafot, seven of Shvizin, seventh month, 7 days of Sukkot. There's so many, not parallels, there's so much mythological structure here, it's easy to miss it, so it's so clear. So what's going on? Why do we invite dead people? Why do we invite dead people into our sukkah? So, that's interesting. What festival would you celebrate at the end of the harvest cycle, where you've gathered all your crops, and you celebrate through the night and invite dead people? Halloween. Which is at the same time of year. I mean, this wonderful this morning on a website, Being Jewish, clearly an Orthodox website, saying someone goes, I really like Halloween, but I'm becoming religious as a Jew. Can I still keep it? And the guy goes, no, you mustn't. It's Christian. And he reads the whole history of Halloween and explains how it's completely against Judaism and you mustn't do it. And as a practical thing, you know, trick or treating is being rude. I mean, trick or treating was invented much later just to make money. But on that level, yeah, of course, because now it's done separately. But conceptually, Halloween is the same source of Sukkot. And when I see a festival repeated in every culture, I don't think it's less true, I think it's more true. Okay? Every self-respecting religion has a festival of light in the middle of the winter months. In the middle, to show it's halfway there. Or to quote Doctor Who, halfway out of the dark. The first time they did a Christmas special when they recognised people who don't do the Christmas. But the Doctor was a perfect example of that. Okay, you do a festival of light in the middle of the... So we have Hanukkah, and they have Christmas, 25. It's all... When I say it's all the same, it's not the same. The individual particular version of it is ours and must be kept as ours. But the idea is universal, but must be kept particular. What do I mean by that? I appreciate the idea of love, but you only understand love if you love one person. Okay? If you start loving lots of people, you have no idea about love. So love is a universal idea, but you express it in a particular relationship. And without particularity, you can't understand universal. In the same way, as we celebrate our festival as an emet, as a truth in Hashem, as others do, and then you understand the universal idea. The same with Hanukkah, and same with Sukkot. I did a bit of philosophy there, very fast. Did I go over that? It's quite Daniel Eisenberg, if you're on slippery ice, run fast. Okay, but that, I believe that, by the way. And I've talked to the Chief about this, that universalism doesn't make something less real, it makes it more true. Like the flood. Look up on Wikipedia. 500 different versions of the flood in different cultures. So, what's the message? Something happened! And our version is the difference with the Gilgamesh story, is the Noah version. That's the key. So universalism, absolutely. We can recognise something universally, but you have to live it particularly. And since you're already Jewish, why not do Allah? And seriously, because if you try to be something else, you spend 20 years trying to be something else, and you never really get it. So you might as well do what you are. And you'll understand universal through your particular. Okay? You always get respect by being what you are. And you're universally relevant the more particular that you are. Sachs is all about that. The more he talks about his own traditions and beliefs, the more people go, yeah, I understand that. Okay, so, back to Halloween. So, a little bit, we're not voting the whole thing here, but Halloween is a similar idea. Samhain, or Samhain is pronounced, whatever, female pig in the middle of an Irish, whatever, that's not important, second paragraph. Samhain is the most important of the fire festivals, because it marks the Celtic New Year. Samhain was the original festival that became All Saints' Day in the Christian calendar. Since the Celts, like many cultures, started every year at sunset of the night before. You like this? The Celts celebrated a day start in the evening. It wasn't just us. It's an ancient mythological idea. You start a day in the evening. The sunset the night before, the evening, Erev, right, became All Hallows' Day. which was eventually turned into Halloween. So Halloween is an evening festival that starts in the night. Awfully Jewish. Among other things, Samhain is the beginning of the winter half of the year. This, I'm not going to read that bit. And it's known as the day between years. Day between years. Is the old year is over, but the new year hasn't begun. Is that relevant? The new year's over. Well, yeah, because Rosh Hashanah, the new year has begun. But the old year isn't finished yet, because the new year's begun, but can I still do repentance over my sins of the last year? Yeah, I can do it for Yom Kippur. Right? Right? My teacher always said, you know, repent now and avoid the Yom Kippur lush. But if you didn't, you can do Yom Kippur. And if you didn't do Yom Kippur, you can hang on. One last chance. Right? You can keep doing it, even you can keep doing Tashlich and ask your forgiveness until Hashanah Rabbah, the end of Sukkot. So we hang on to the previous year. Right, here's Rosh Hashanah over there, you can see it. And here is the end of Sukkot. You are still asked to do repentance for the previous year until here. So in the middle space, I'm between years. The new year hasn't begun, really, in earnest, because I've still come to Jerusalem, I've got to make it home. And the old year is over. So I'm in the in-between time, the magical time between one life and the next, between one door and another door, those corridors in the Matrix, whatever it is, the in-between worlds, the World's End pub in Neil Gaiman's comic writings, where different mythologies all come to meet, between worlds. There's a World's End pub, by the way, in Camden, which I love that idea. In the World's End pub in Neil Gaiman's comic writings, you go there, you can meet creatures from all different mythologies, because they're just kind of popping out in different mythologies. Wonderful idea, in between time. What kind of conversations do you have between worlds? Because if you're not in a world, then you're free. But you can look back at it, and you can be excited about the next world you're about to go into. Imagine if there was a pause between last year and this year, and you weren't in the world in that time, and you were free. What would you do in that in-between time? What would you think? Right? When you were outside your normal mode, you were outside your house. Because your house is your trappings of your life. So get outside your house for the first, say, a week, and live somewhere where you've got no obligations. No obligations at all. Last year's over, next year hasn't begun yet. Just think about it. Sukkot. Yeah, if you go to the right session, absolutely. Read music. But the idea is in between time. Let's keep going. The day before Samhain is the last day of the old year, the day after Samhain is the first day of the new year. See, they're you know, Celtics, they do one day, we Jews, we'll have seven. Okay. Being between years, it is considered a very magical time when the dead walk among the living, and the veils of the past and present and future may be lifted in prophecy and divination. Avraham, come in, have a seat. Yitzchak, come in. What the hell are we doing? We welcome dead people. I mean, Ushbizin, it's a mad idea. You know? Okay, Pesach, we invite Eliyahu, but he never died. That's how we can invite him. But he goes, Eliyahu never died. He went up in a trap of fire so he can visit all of our people and come. Fine, because he never died. Avraham died. Right? That's why you can invite him. Right? But that means that it shouldn't be on Tibet, but on Sukkot, you can. Because you're not in the world. You're not alive. You're between death and life, and the mortal space in between. That's where you are living for Sukkot. You are free. What about those evil symbols? Samhain was the time of year when the herds were culled. Okay, we'll see, I knew it was coming. That means the farmers and herders killed the old, sick or weak animals, as well as others they didn't think would make it through the winter with that year's available food. In the old times, the really ancient civilization was always on the move, and they had cattle with them, so they couldn't carry it, they had to kill it off. Prior to the last few centuries in the West, most people lived with death as a common part of life, especially since most of them lived on farms. Samhain became imbued with symbolism of death of the old year and the rebirth of the new, so skeletons and skulls joined the ghosts as symbols of a holiday. Again, there's nothing evil here, at least to the innocent in heart. Indeed, in Mexico, the holiday is known as Los Dios de Lemuros, Day of the Dead, combining both. Skeletons and skull toys and candles are made and enjoyed by millions. You don't have to be afraid of death. We sit in shul and we read Kohelet, And that last chapter is all about what happens when you get old and you die and you get weaker and you wither. And it's not depressive. It's part of life. You can respect it. Old age is a wonderful, wonderful special thing. If understood, that of course physically it's hard and that kind of stuff. Right? But, you know, and there are negative parts of old age. I have to tell this joke because it's the funniest thing. Joan Rivers. Right? Who's 75 years old, you know, and hates the fact that she's old. She said this on a Graham Norton show, but and she said, you know, I got interviewed by, now what's her name? She's a Jewish, she's on show Radio 5 Live, Vanessa Feltz, right? Vanessa Feltz was interviewing her. And Joan Rivers hates the fact that she's old. She hates when people kind of say, so what's that again? Not Joan Rivers, the other one. Vanessa Feltz said to her, oh, Joan, you're 75 years old young. And she goes, yes, and you're 150 pounds thin. Vanessa Feltz, which I just thought was, you know, it's like, which, you know, that's boom. But it's not, because come on, be honest about it. So of course there's a, I just love that line. I'm curious to say that line to a Jew. Brilliant. Ben Norton was in shock when she said that. He goes, you couldn't have said that to Vanessa. Anyway, the point is that, of course, old age is sad because you're weak and you haven't got the energy, of course. On that level, individually, it could be hard, of course. There's some aspects of more old age I'm looking forward to. But in terms of being part of life and recognising it's part of life and educating our children that it's part of life is a very important thing. We shouldn't be afraid of death and hide it. You go to a shiva, and you go to the burial ground, and you take your spade, and you dig it in the ground, and you pick up some mud, and you help bury the dead. You're part of it. You know, it's fascinating to me, you know, I've lived it sometimes, you know, they'll cover the mud and make it all carpeted and clean, and the coffin is all nice and clean. It's not. Death is mucky and muddy and dirty and sad, but it's real. So get involved, and don't be afraid to do that. The women can as well. Take that spade, and take that mud and put it in, be part of the process of life and death. That's what it is. Most psychiatrists and psychologists seem to agree that Halloween's emphatic celebration of death serves to bring out our culture's suppressed feelings about the topic, and this can be a healthy experience. I strongly suspect the primary reason for American cultures, I got this from some random website, but it's one reading of it, but look at your own versions of it, because there's lots of cultures around Halloween. And American culture's aversion to think about death and dying is most modern Westerners don't believe the mainstream monotheistic religion's doctrine on the topic. If they do, they fear eternal punishment more than they expect eternal reward. The problem with Halloween is it's very paganistic. And people think Judaism and paganism are opposites. Unfortunately, I disagree a bit. In that, Maimonides, of course, idolatry is a big issue in Torah. Okay? And the 630 commandments and the 50 about not doing idolatry. Suddenly makes you all more fun than you realise, by the way. Probably. But the mythical ideas of paganism about the culture and the nature of life and existence are in Judaism as well. They just express them differently. Okay, enough about that. You read more about it. The parallels are unbelievable. It's a similar time of year, Halloween. Okay, end of October. It's a bit later than us, of course, but that's because it's in England and different cultural space. But the idea is the same: the recognition of the cycle of life. And Sukkot is not about mortality, it's even sharper than that. It's living in the space between worlds, between the end of one life and the beginning of the next. So, I've got somebody here to make it as clear as possible. Sukkot is a kind of holiday after the end of your old life, just when you're starting a new one. Death is sad because life is over, but death lets you put things in perspective. A eulogy, a hesped, highlights the positive and value of a life. Now, who they were is clear. When everything is gathered together, the essence is distilled. You know what you are on Sukkot? It's like being on holiday. It's a real chag. Why? Jacqueline and I did this once. We went to Israel, and got a plane from Gatwick, so we had to get the Network Southeast, whatever it's called now, train. And the flight was at 10, whatever, so we ended up on the train at 7 a.m. Just when everybody was going to work. So there's us, in jeans and relaxed, going to Israel on holiday, holding the green, next to our friends who we knew, who are on the way to work. And the atmosphere was totally different. They felt bound by life. They were inside their work day, right? And we just didn't feel connected, because when you're on a holiday, especially when you visit another country, it doesn't matter that much. You're just visiting this world. I'm not part of what's going on here. I'm just on holiday. I'm having fun. I'm going to visit the museum. I'm going to visit things and leave again. It's just fun. You're free. You're disconnected a bit from life. That's why people love tourism and holiday so much, because they want to get away from life the whole time, which can be unhealthy to do it the whole time, just to travel. But that's why people do it, because they feel free. Tara says, yeah, you need that, but then you need to go back. So you get a week's holiday, a hug. A hug asif. You, in Sukkot, the old life is over, but you haven't started the new year yet. You are free. You see your sukkah, and it doesn't matter. Your best cutlery, bring it in, what the heck? I know we already have it in the nice house, it's all nice and neat. We'll make do in the sukkah, we'll squash it. It doesn't matter. You're free for Sukkot, because you're not bound by life. You literally put a pause button on your life, and you let go for a bit. And you can only do that after you die. So we die every year on Sukkot. The old life, the old year, is dead. And you can let go of it. You can take off that skin and not be part of it anymore before the new one begins. So you're a tourist. We enjoy our holiday, but we're not too bothered by specific to the context we're in. We are travellers. We can move on. We can take what is precious, enjoy museums and be beautiful about our culture, and leave all the rest behind. Well, after all this, but all this is after we've just begun our new lives. So why be sad? Here's the point. At the end of life, there's no cycle. It's over. There's no more cycles. But when you know you're going to get another year, another life, it's quite exciting. Again, if you did anybody put your hand up, you saw the Doctor Who Christmas special. No, it did. You know, the cycle goes down. Only when you get to the last one, it's sad. But the other cycles are great. Right? She gets to have her one-day holiday every year on Christmas, which is her Hagasim. So that's just close to story. Okay. But I see these imageries repeated in all mythologies, in all cultures, in all times. It makes it more real and more true. But you have this moment of freedom. And you have to go back to doing things all over again. And there's many mythologies and stories about that. There's a moment, a secret moment in the middle of the night when you can be yourself, and then you have to go back to everything again. One example of it is on, let me get this right, one of the examples on this right is on Purim. And this is Shlomo Carlebach. Since I mentioned him earlier, let me give you a bit of Shlomo Carlebach Torah. Shlomo Carlebach says, on Purim, the tzaddikim in heaven want to dance. This is pure Shlomo Carlebach. I heard it from his mouth and what he is, I'll tell you. He said, the righteous people want to dance in heaven on Purim. But heaven's not a very big place, because there aren't that many righteous people. So there's no room to dance. So they think, so where's big? Hell. So they go to hell, and they get everybody drunk there, and they all fall asleep, and they shine up in heaven, and then they dance in hell. So that's what Purim is. All the wicked people fall asleep and don't even realize they're in heaven. But tzaddikim dance in Gehenna. That's Purim. I'm not going to go what that means. It's a brilliant idea. Okay, just think what that means. But that idea that you can break the rules one day and go away from somewhere else and be playful and then come back to life again. Okay? And Limud or Shabbat, these are other elements of it. Shabbat cycle, someone's called Limud a kind of Shabbat. Because you get away from your life and think about what really matters. Okay? You turn off it, all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. But it's built in, so you get a whole week of it with Sukkot. Pervade the old and gear up for the new. Without the heart, you're actually starting yet. That's what's happening to the plants. They're underneath the ground. Everything's being buried. For next year, we're planting. We're going to start planting. Everything's underground. You can't see anything above the surface in the winter. I'm happy that my life is over, and I really value it. That's why the day of death is better than the day of life. I can even understand, you know what? I can even understand other great lives. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I can understand who they are and what they're all about. And now, it's still spinning, just about, over here. We can come back to basar v'chalal, meat and milk. Okay? Now, do you get it? Why Sukkot? Lot v'shagadi v'chalal imo. Do you not see the kibbutz milk? You tell me. Life and death, it's sharper. Pardon? The cycle can't continue. Right? If you cook the meat in the milk, then you're collapsing the 7 days. You're disallowing the between worlds opportunity. You have to separate the death and life moment. If you join the two together, you end up actually having no future. Right? In separating a meat and milk, you're recognizing the process of being alive, of existence. And all that, and that's why kashrut becomes so big, actually. Not just the animal that you are eating, but the cycle of that animal. that animals should have its children and its children's children. And life should continue on this earth. And I am part of that, but I'm not going to try and control it or destroy it. Imagine having that every time you bite into a burger, or you have milk, or you wait your hours in between. You know? We wait a couple of hours. 3, 1, 7, whatever it is. The gap is the gap between worlds. Okay? By the way, Tosfot, again, you'll like this, but Tosfot originally said, you have to wait between sudot, between meals. So if you bench, you can eat meat and milk 10 minutes after the other. You know? That's what they really said, but then we said, no, bloody, your teeth have to be careful. Again, practical issues, you made it longer. But really, it was between sudot, between meals. Because meals are cycles, the processes, the next time you need to live to sustain yourself. So the gaps between those worlds. That's what meat and milk is all about, essentially. Milk is the beginning of new life, and meat is the death of the old life. And if you mix the two together, you don't understand what it means to be alive. You're just stuck in this one world. And you can never reflect on it, and then you can never grow. Joe?
So, is it a similar point with draining the blood? That's one thing. But actually, I also want... Could you mention something about Sukkot and this idea that in the end of the day, we're going to eat in the skin of the Leviathan? Because I feel like that must...
Of course it does. But... Okay, I'll have a little go. First one you mentioned about draining the blood, absolutely. In Smicha, before I started doing Basar Chala, we do Melicha first, which is all about salting meat. And salting, which I'm an expert now, I spent a year on it. And in salting meat, you have to have different kinds of blood. There's blood of life and there's blood of the bones. And again, just like I had in my head when I'm doing, I can't even tell you this, but just like when I did Basar Chala, I had to have something in my head to keep going, I had chickens, I had something else in my head during a Melicha. And that was vampires. Okay, but I love vampire movies. And the parallels are unbelievable and fascinating between different kinds of blood. Because you can't eat old blood, right? When Tom Cruise tried the old blood, he nearly died. Okay? And one's done right and one's done by none. It's fantastic. It kept me awake to the whole process and that issue. So blood is also part of the life issue. That's another aspect of it. But blood is life force, absolutely. Absolutely, it's connected as well. But that's just about respecting life. This is about the cycle of life, different aspect. And the second thing you mentioned again was?
Skin of the Leviathan.
Skin of the Leviathan. Okay, this is my massive one by my teacher, okay? It's the end of days, the Leviathan issue, by the way, right? But Leviathan is in Genesis, one of the Tainilim. This is just for Joel, but if you can follow, that's fine. The great things, they were single. They didn't have a partner. At the end of the day, it finds its partner, and then it's finished, and it dies, and then it can eat it because it's complete. But Matthew said, there's a wonderful parallel, okay, about a long living creature in mythology, in a book which I mentioned earlier, which is alone and waits at the end of time for its wife to come in. The longest living thing. And in the process, it saved the whole world. You know who it is? It's the Ents. The Ents wait for the Ent wives at the end of time. Right? The Ents of the Leviathan. He does it with trees. This is Tolkien, not the link, by the way. But it's mythology. But you should know, Tolkien is all biblical. He was a Hebrew scholar, and all the names of the characters in Lord of the Rings are Hebrew. So, Sa'on is the prince of power. Sa'on. I could go on. Gandalf, the Fodor, Billy Bob. Agamemnon, probably won't. Anyway, so it's to do with the end of that cycle of life. But again, I haven't learned that enough. But it's to do with that issue about relationship being completed at the end of time as well. They were lonely as well, and finally unification happens from creation itself. So Sukkot is a combination of a creation magical issue. But I don't know enough about it. But that's the path that's in. Anyway, back to this. Here we go. So the kashrut connection now makes sense. As do hakachot. The reason we're dancing around is. Whether you do it with Torah, by the way, I love the fact you do it with Torah, or you do it with Lulav and Etrog, right? Because, I mean, that's been the whole split in modern Israel, right? Secular Israelis on secular kibbutzim, they've got rid of Torah, and they get into culture, the agriculture, the cycle, they're trying to rebuild the original cycle. And yeshiva bachos have no connection with the physical world, they just dance with Torah. And the whole point is, it's one tree, it's a tree of life, which is a physical tree. It's the same thing. Dancing the Sefer Torah, which has got an ex-chaim on it, made of wood, is the same as dancing with the Lulav and Etrog. It's about life. Torah is alive, it's fresh. If you drop a Torah, you have to fast, because it's a living thing, right? So then it's the same cycle. Darkness with Sefer Torah, darkness with Lulav and Etrog is the same thing. You are darkness with the location of life. And by doing that circle, and this is what I feel when I go out in Shul on Hashanah Rabba, the last seven, you go out seven times on the seventh issue. It's like everything is coming to an end. The cycle is over. Life is complete. We're about to start the new year. It's the most wonderful, mad davening Hashanah Rabba. Everybody rushes it really fast in Shul. If you make it, I used to get up early with my dad to go. It's a really fun issue. But we just kind of let go of the old year. Right? And that's what's going on in those cycles. And finishing off, now you see the gap between meat and milk, and you understand what it's really about. So we can go back to our board, yeah, I've got 2 minutes, and we can understand it. Chicken is a side issue, because chicken isn't really part of the meat, and it has to be something that you milk. And chickens have eggs, which is not the same thing. It has to be something that you milk. Right? And so the argument I gave, as I said, is it's not just about food. It's not just about food, it's about a cycle of life. And therefore, it can't just be Shavuot that we do it on. Shavuot, we live it. We have to be reminded of it every time we take life. And when you eat meat, you are taking life. And you are allowed to do that. But if you do that, don't have the blood, which makes you recognize the value of life, but also don't let go of the cycle of life. The universe has to continue. The process has to follow on. It's bigger than just you. And that's what meat and milk is really about. And I love that idea. And if you connect back to the matrix that I talked about yesterday, it's fascinating because humans have been turned into seeds and planting and all that process. That's all, the whole structure of the matrix is all about, you know, the robots want to survive, so they plant humans because they want to live. But humans want to survive, and ultimately they work together in a crap third movie because they want to survive. But the idea makes sense, which is that life has to continue. And that's what we're doing every time. So meeting is not just a matter, and all the extra halachas of food and plastic and separating things, yeah, it matters that much. Because anything that will make you a member will do it. Okay? And so rabbis kept adding those astringencies. And the astringencies, if you don't understand them, feel like a straitjacket. But if you understand that to make you more aware and sensitive about life, then you want more of them. Bring it on. You know, the best defense of two-day chag I ever heard was Clive Norton. Clive said, you know, don't you like if I do? Wouldn't you want another day? Nothing about luck at the end of a minute. It's just, don't you like it? Wouldn't you want another day? So any ability to act, if you know why you're doing it, becomes pleasurable, becomes meaningful. That when I bite into a sandwich, I can be worshipping God. It's an amazing thing. It's totally physical, and it's totally spiritual at the same time. That's what Judaism is always about, unifying the two together. You can't make kiddush by just saying the words, and you can't make kiddush just by drinking wine. You take the idea in your hand and you drink it. And without doing both, you haven't done anything. Okay? Yes?
You're thinking about how the life cycle and everything, but then shouldn't it apply to fish as well? Because fish is also the life cycle, and if we're having a kiddush, we're allowed to have fish with milk.
Yeah, but fish don't produce milk. It's not about the life cycle, it's the life cycle of that species. That's why, even though you can't have someone else's milk, now, we talked about that, it's not just its own mother's milk, but another mother's milk, technically. But the root law, why do you say Bachalev Imor? It's its mother. If you destroy that cycle, then that strand of existence, of evolution, we'll get into Darwin's evolution later on. It's very important. The more I study evolution, the more I think it's a mitzvah to study it. But it deepens your Judaism. But life has to continue. If you stop that line, it's over. Right? We need the line to come. It's not like saving Private Ryan. You know, it's a mad movie. 20 men died so that one boy could survive. He's the last remaining son of a family of four. But what if he died? Americans will survive. America survives. But not that family line. And what's the point of life if you can't keep the family lines going, the lines? So if you kill a mother and his child, you are, and now you understand, by the way, but set Hashanah. I'm going to go back to that. Remember it said the end of the year? And the Tukufat Hashanah? How can it be the end if it's the beginning? That's the point. It's the end before. It's the end after the beginning. It's the cycle in between. So fish don't have that. It's different. Pardon? And chicken again. That's why I said chicken's a separate issue for that reason. But there are rules about chickens and eggs for that reason. Okay? It's a separate issue. But the meat and milk one, that's what we did it there. Okay? So don't confuse those two issues. Okay, a few other questions because we've got time. Yes?
Well, it's about chickens and eggs. There is a prohibition about eating the eggs and the mother hen.
Sure, if I can, yes, not upsetting the mother, right.
That doesn't seem to come into practical issues about not eating eggs and chicken.
Yeah. Right, yeah, in other words, chicken omelette.
What happened then?
Yeah? So again, you could, if you want to be extra strict, and you're allowed to do this, but is Tola and Halacha two possibilities? Is it perfect? This is the way we're supposed to live. Anything exactly perfect? Or is it, this is the minimal within demand of you to understand what it means to be a human being and you can live well? And you are allowed, by choice, to do more if it's needed for you. Which do you think it is? Is Torah ideal or the minimal level? And it's a big debate, halacha, and a lot of Rabbanim said to me, it makes much more sense to say, it's what we demand of you. You have to do this. You want to do chumla, a little bit strict, because you need that. You need that awareness because you're such a person that's that life, then do it for chicken as well. We're not going to demand of you. For instance, one example, for instance, are you allowed to wear a fur coat? Yes. Made of an animal. You bet. You can buy it, you can enjoy it, absolutely. And make a bracha, actually, I'm not sure it's leather, you want to make a bracha, shekhani, but you can wear it, halachically. It's disgusting. Are you allowed to hunt an animal? No. Just for the skins and not eat it? Absolutely not allowed. So why? So why is that? Because the halachic demand was minimally, you mustn't do this in calamities for stuff. Okay? We're not going to demand that you can't wear it from someone else. You shouldn't really either, if you understand the reason of it. But the minimum demand is you don't get involved in the killing. Level two, ideally you shouldn't either, we're not going to demand it of you. So halacha has a basic level of recognition. If you get it, you can keep that level. If you want to get it more, make it strict, because you get it, then do more as well. But the meat and milk was a bigger one. Today, as I mentioned yesterday, there are more chickens around than anything else. That wasn't always the case. So maybe it should apply more to chickens, and we should recognise chickens. And maybe we should only buy chickens that weren't, that were organically grown. Okay? Because you know, it's a big halakhic debate as well, what that means. There's a whole other thing I'm not getting into now, because I can't do that, because I can't talk about that. But there's big halakhic debates, and chickens aren't always killed properly, and there's big issues in it, and we're trying to fight that battle. Right? But historically, it was more about meat. So that was the area. But you could apply, you could take an idea and make it further if you want. Absolutely. One more question? No, yes. So what were you here yesterday?
No.
Okay, I'll build a pizza again today, but we separated chicken out because chicken can't cook a kid its mother's milk. Chickens don't have milk,
right.
So it's not part of it. The basic reason is because chicken schnitzels and turkey schnitzels look exactly the same. Under a purely practical level, you can confuse the two. So rabbis put chicken with meat, as does every non-Jewish butcher.
Chicken
or veal schnitzel. Because fish meat tastes and looks different generally. There are a few exceptions, but generally you can tell the difference with fish. Much more. Much more. It's not perfect, but it's much more different. Now, tomorrow, that's one philosophy of meat and milk from Shemot and Sukkot. But the number one we're going to do tomorrow, which is to do with breast milk and leadership. That's tomorrow. Thank you.